Okay, so let's do the article. I wanted to say, Clinton, did you spend a lot of time checking your spelling mistakes? Because there's hardly any mistakes. That's pretty impressive.
Thanks. There is a few that I'm hoping will get fixed, but I did, I did go through it pretty thoroughly. I've been working. I'm sick of you saying that my writing is shit. So I've read a few books on composition, and I've been trying some new things, and I've been trying to up my my writing game.
Okay, so it starts off fragmentation by the book. If you were following my thing, I'd put that in quotes. Because remember, Kloon, whatever you put in quotes, those were effects. So you would say.
It's a pun, because when something's by the book, it's the standard answer. So I'm referring to fragmentation by the book, as in, like, here's how the book says it goes.
Well, it's like the uniformity people expect from the book doesn't happen.
Well, no. By the book, fragmentation is caused by, which is not the book. You know?
Most of the books you'll read will blame this fragmentation on something other than books.
Yeah,
that's right.
Not self-serving at all.
Yeah, here's the reason for fragmentation by the book, which is not diagnosed fragmentation as being caused by the book. Yes, exactly. Thank you, Brian.
You're saying you don't mean it as a cause.
Well, no, you know the phrase when you do something by the book? By the book. That's all. So, this section, the first section, is called Fragmentation by the Book.
Okay. So as I read this, and read it, there's a lot of extraneous conceptualization and bringing in postmodern terms, and maybe Mark Andreessen or whoever else likes it, you have a bit of their language in there, and they don't, when they read McLuhan, it's none of their modern language, so they don't like it. But,
That is a deliberate rhetorical choice on my part, is to talk to people in the language with which they're familiar, as a halfway point. Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that's what you were doing. So I accept it on that way, but I also think maybe once you get their attention, fucking get more quote doctrinaire and bring in the new insights and just spell them out without a lot of confusion. Because I don't think many normal people can't read this. They have to be a college educated to get these points. Okay, so you start off. Here is how the story usually goes. The defining feature of the Western Enlightenment subject is radical individualism. Don't know if it's radical individualism. Now that's something that needs to be explained. But what is individualistic? Because people know they're individuals; they always felt they're individuals. What is this individualism as some kind of concept? Well, it's a concept that comes out of print that you're an individual. It's a different thing. An individual who knows a lot of book stuff. Now you could say that's radical, but that's not necessarily put in radical. It is individualism. Put individualism in quotes. Anyways, he suffers from a social disconnect. But he also enjoys the disconnect. His individualism can go two ways. Western man either deludes himself grandiosely. You don't have to say grandiosely. Unless you're appealing to idiotic people that like extra words, which you say you're doing. Western man either deludes himself grandiosely into considering himself self-made, or in the negative sense, suffers from radical alienation. That is the basic problem as rendered in critical terms. Now, you could say, that's how the story usually goes, but wait a minute. What nobody knows is that when people read books, they didn't feel that way. They didn't get alienated. They loved books. They kept reading them more and more. Alexander Pope got pissed off in 1742 about it. They weren't getting any media ecology effects. They were getting lost in the new medium. The primary reason given for this radical individualism derives from the intensification of the division of labor, which began its gradual uptick at the dawn of Europe's 17th century. Marx is the only fucker who thought it was division of labor. Everybody else is enjoying their jobs. When the Irish, you know, had the famine and the British took away their industry, they fucking starved. They give us the fucking industry! Then they got so fucking mad because they didn't get any industry, they started being Luddites and smashing it. But they wanted to be part of the new environment, and it was being withdrawn from them. So they didn't think it was an alienation in the mass level, and media are only on the mass level. There's no individual effects of the book on you privately. You could have the brain analyze some subtle stuff. But the mass effect is in this nebulous level of maybe meme generation. We don't know what to call it. Why does the effects of the medium, which nobody is aware of personally, make people think, okay, we got to get rid of the Catholic Church. We're going to have our own church. See, what is that mass effect is what McLuhan is interested in. Okay, so all of the most important social theories throughout and about this period focus on the division of labor or specialization. That's a limited, educated elite that's creating theories, and only a few people are doing it. It's not on a mass level. Adam Smith points out that 10 people working serially, each performing a single stage in the production of a pin, cutting the wire, grinding the tip, etc., can produce 1,000-fold more pin a day than 10 people each performing all the steps in parallel on their own pins. Now, I'm reading it too fast, probably, unless I'm not, but that's because I've read it before. How's it going, Brian? Am I reading it too fast? Or Chad?
Yeah, I will put the link in the chat, by the way, just because we neglected to do that for people who are listening.
Okay. Let's see. Chad.
Like you're going on a good rate for me, though.
Well, you know it.
Yeah.
Am I going too fast, Chad? Where the fuck's Chad? He fall asleep? Okay. Not even here, maybe. Becomes one-tenth a pin maker. Or, I don't know if I read that. A pin maker then reducing the role to only one part of pin making becomes one-tenth a pin maker. Work becomes meaningless on any large scale because man's job becomes a trivial object. Those are subjective statements, Clinton.
They are the statements that are being made by the not minuscule, not elite, great deal of Marxists who are all talking about this everywhere at every level. If you join a union, you hear about this shit. This is the basic fundamental theory that's all over the place, Bob. You're way off the mark.
That's in the 20th century, not in the 19th century. They're all glad just that they can get together,
yeah,
the
this
workers.
It's on the level of premise, Bob. It's just we're setting up the, it's like the, you have heard it said that XYZ, but I say unto you, ABC. We're just still in the XYZ part. It's just summarized, like, all these jerks are telling you blah, 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 as you know, but summarizing it. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, but he doesn't spell out the McLuhan cause enough.
I'm not there yet. This is the start where I'm paraphrasing what other people say.
Later. Okay. The results of his labor are so detached from his role in the total process that he feels totally unrelated to it. Now, people... You know, millennials, they fucking hate labor no matter anything. They don't even want to show up at school or do anything, is the rumor, as a mass effect. And they're doing it because of the extreme multi-body world they're in. They can't even do any chemical body stuff. So young people will really like this, but they'll get no awareness from it. Just feeds their biases. Okay, the results of his labor are so detached from his role in the total process that he feels totally unrelated to it. He can't own the end product because he has no expert knowledge of the total product. He can only master some rudimentary, arbitrary task that anyone else could easily do. He is replaceable and anonymous, a cog in the machine. In fact, economic theorists then proceed to explain that modern machinery itself and all its complexity derives from the same division of labor. People became parts in the process, and each part, once parceled out of a total craft, can be individually mechanized. That is not what they feel when they're doing it 150 years ago. Piece by piece, each human optimizes their part of the total work. So, you know, you begin by saying, this is the story. Here's how the story usually goes. Now that we've been in the electronic Marconi galaxy for 100 fucking years. That's how the story goes, because of the Marconi galaxy. That makes people aware of the fragmentation, because the idea to be integral and to be more whole, which the electric effect creates, a tactile thing, that's bugging people. They don't get much time to do that. So they get dances, and they get a lot of music stuff, and then they make a big deal out of Louis Armstrong and all this stuff. One at a time, each human in the chain is methodically plucked out and replaced. One example might be the retail store. Yesterday it was the cashiers tallying up the goods for retail sale who were plucked out of the system, and tomorrow it will be the truck drivers who deliver them to the loading dock. But the real retail system itself remains in operation and survives in its identity across each change.
Like a ship inventing... of...
What?
Ship of Theseus, right? Once you have division of labor within your organization, each individual sort of gets better and better and finds out the best way to become the most efficient, because now they're a specialist in their one small part, and their efficient becomes so machine-like that then you have to invent the machine that replaces that guy who did all the work of optimizing their job in the workflow, right? And like a ship of Theseus, bit by bit, the entire system becomes automated.
Yes, and that's due to the new electric technology.
With that, yes, the new electronic technology allowed for the cybernetic total modeling, the operations research, right, the research into the operations of the whole, which allowed the installation of the cybernetic governor in the middle, which began regulating the input and output of the system. Yeah, but I mean, this has been going on in a more ersatz manner for centuries prior, and everyone knew it. I mean, looms, right? Like, everything. And Emil Durkheim, I just threw another link in the chat to the Wikipedia article, which is on division of labor. And Emil Durkheim was not some, like, ignored Joe Schmo no one heard of. He's the first major sociologist. And his seminal work was literally titled The Division of Labor in Society. And this is where everyone learned it from. So we've known this since, this book published in 1893.
Yeah, only a few people read it. T.S. Eliot said, my audience is 3,000 people. After World War II, everybody fucking goes to school, the GI Bill and all that, and they learn about Eliot and all this shit. And so then his audience expands among the masses. But he himself lived at a time when there was only 3,000 fucking people listening to him. It's very tiny, these subcultures. I'm saying sociology and academia, nobody knew about that. A couple of sociology professors who got into sociology, they knew him. But it's not impacting anybody. It only becomes the content. When the electric leisure society comes in after World War II, then everybody knows everything about a lot of stuff because they got time to fucking hear it. But none of those ideas are affecting society because... if we're all so smart and educated now, how come everybody's saying everybody's dumb? And dumbness rules, and you get presidents like Biden. So, and every other president.
I mean, overall, you do, there is a very spectacular demonstration of the more basic McLuhan principle, and which he credited Marx with understanding that, or you said that, that, that the machine does it by its, the machine does it automatically, that you don't necessarily need, there is a class struggle, you know, achieving the new world of the future is not going to happen because of class struggle, you know, that actually it's going to be because of the elaboration of the new conditions that the new technologies have brought us are going to make it inevitable, and it's just a matter of, you know, how long will it take, how long will the brick be applied, will it be in a more or less bloody time to get more or less friction getting there or something. And so it's reflected in this issue I was noticing lately where people in Deleuze and Guattari, they talk a lot about the daddy and mommy and child triad, you know, the anti-Oedipus thing, anti-Oedipus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is obviously, I'm saying tangentially, they're very popular among the academic post-Marxists who would take this story of the Marxian story of the fragmentation of the self as gospel or something, or as their basis. And so that, you know, there's been this long, following on from the efforts that the academic efforts that you're deriding as not affecting society, following that, there was a well-documented and academic revolution or movement that was, people were kind of trying to apply anti-Oedipus-based mission to a lot of different things, like they're doing the work of building the new consciousness that goes beyond that, and people have called it out as being like, this is a deliberate attempt to break down the family unit, which is, you know, it kind of is, like that's sort of the stated intention to undermine Oedipus that way as a cultural influence that everyone grows up under. All of their efforts in academia is not what accomplished it. What accomplished it is the fucking smartphone and tablets that now the child, instead of competing with the other parent for the attention of any given parent, they're competing with the fucking phone. They're competing with the tech money. You know, so like, it's just like the whole Oedipus, like, triangle just got, like, vivisected and, like spread open and, like, a new adversary to compete for attention with came in that is just has completely different dynamic. And that makes it, like, now everybody is, you know, mom is competing with the phone for dad's attention. You're competing with the phone for dad's attention and competing with the phone for mom's attention. And phone is a better competitor than mom or dad are for each other's attention. And you know, kids growing up would very astutely notice they notice when they fight a losing battle to get their parents' attention, but they'll also notice when one parent fights a losing battle to get the other parent's attention, and the other parent's like, while they're just scrolling their phone and not getting it. And the very sensitive child is like picking up the frustration from the other parent that doesn't end up getting said. Yeah. But like Oedipus is just, the smartphone just came in and just stomped Oedipus. Like it's gone now. It's a flattened out. It's been drawn and quartered, you know? And that was, the medium did that, not the fucking, all their hard work in academia of like, you know, doing the labor of translating every subject into this new language. Although, you know, that helps us navigate this new world, but it wasn't the effective force that changed the world.
Yeah, so McLuhan just simply said, Freud's gone. And he said, now they go to Esalen Institute, and the lords, LURDES, of multisensory exploration, they get in a hot bath and talk to each other, and maybe do other stuff. That's a whole different new kind of therapy that just came in, took over, and McLuhan was on it as soon as it happened, and he saw it as an effect of the global theater.
Right.
Meanwhile, Baudrillard and them are fucking studying Lacan, who's a transitional guy who knows, well, Freud's not working. All had a little eccentric fucking concept about the mirror to that, and everybody goes for that. Well, you see a lot of these professors, 60 and 70, they all went through Lacan studies. They all talk about it. I don't think people at the time, I wasn't aware that people were reading Lacan in the 70s, you know, but a lot of professors were and getting influenced by it. And then that's as far as they got. And they just complexified their courses and their students couldn't understand them. And because the students had a bigger problem, which McLuhan was pointing out. That's what I try to show, that all the postmodern, that essay I did, that long one that Clinton read, every postmodern fucking name are just repeating McLuhan erroneously.
Yes, okay. So a couple things there. So first of all, Lacan's secret sauce is his three parts. You know, he's got the real and then the symbolic layer and then the imaginary layer. And it's sort of a model of cybernetics that was lost in translation because Lacan was reading the cyberneticians, the English
cybernetics. Yeah, he was reading Shannon and Weaver.
Translating that into French. And then when Lacan got popular, it was translated into English for people who didn't understand cybernetics. And so the translation
back to English
didn't remap back onto the original terms which were translated into French. So,
isn't that all laid out in the Freudian robot book?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So Lacan, he's got this symbolic sort of thing about, which has got a lot to do with how computer modeling works, right, and, you know, so that's, or at least did back then. So, and
I think the Freudian robot book, the author mentions that, what was Shannon reading? What was he influenced by that nobody knows? Finnegan's Wake, for fuck's sake.
Right. He was looking at information compression, and his point is that you can't compress Finnegan's Wake the way that you could compress a Dick and Jane novel, let's say, or a basic English book, right? Information which is highly redundant and predictable can be compressed a lot and then expanded again without losing anything, right? You can summarize a very predictable book in a few words and get most of it. But Finnegan's Wake is, like, the exemplar of the least compressible, most unpredictable. If you give six words, like, how does this sentence end? You're never going to fucking guess how the sentence ends. There's no way for when you refer to six words of a sentence in Finnegan's Wake, will you guess what the last three fucking words are. No way in hell, right? Most English sentences don't work that way. Most English sentences are like, if today I went, so, you know, I got in my car and I drove to the blank, there's only like probably five or six words that like 90% of people would end their sentence with, right? My job, you know, the store, right? Like two other things, right? Like,
I drove to my mistress.
In France, perhaps. So, the level of predictive, right, this is what's called entropy in information science, right? But Lacan's point, the thing which I notice people who are heavy Lacanians always enjoy is this concept of jouissance, which is the excitement of the chase and the desire for l'objet petit a. And l'objet petit a is the thing that you desire so much it's absolutely overwhelming and it drives you crazy. But then when you get it, you realize you didn't want it after all, and you have a new l'objet petit a to go desire. Thus, we are desiring machines, right? And
Clint, they're analyzing the chemical body. They have new perspective on the chemical body.
Yeah.
Due to the new effect, which they don't notice.
Isn't it weird how there's this sign for this thing in your head, which is the thing you're chasing after so much, and it's driving you, and all your life is revolved around chasing after this thing? But then, once you've got it, you get it. You're like a dog who caught the car he was chasing. What the fuck am I going to do with this? Right?
Right. And that's because there's other environments creating new bodies that are distracting you. You don't notice it.
Yeah. So
let me tell you, here's a thing that obsolescence is losing Guattari. What did McLuhan say? Any family that has a car can't be a fucking family. Simple fucking statement. Drastic. No one took it in. If you have a fucking family, a car, especially a two-car family, you don't have a nuclear family anymore. Because
out of the counting house into the shining armor.
Right. Now that's radical what he's saying. But you have to get to understand why it isn't radical and it's accurate. And of course the generation gap happened once cars came in. Didn't have the generation gap in the 19th century. The kids were supposed to be silent, not even be noticed. What is it? Just be seen but not heard?
Wyndham Lewis in the 20s was formalizing and observing the generation gap being created by youth organizations for political means.
Yeah.
Right? He saw a generation gap being explicitly fostered in Doom of Youth by, you know, all these newspapers that are saying, hey, 20-somethings, aren't adults annoying? And like, hey, please write in and tell us how your kids piss you off, right? And all this sort of muckraking that was going on in the press at the time, right?
Right. So, you know, Lewis, because he pointed out the facts of what was going on, he was considered a troublemaker, a fucking downer, because everybody was enjoying the new effects of youth groups and everything.
Yes, and thank you. That reminds me. What Brian was just saying is that these academics can't be given credit for causing the ultimate subversions which they're accused of causing. Is that a fair summary, you think, Brian?
No, like the right wingers have blamed Judith Butler.
Oh yes.
They think Judith Butler fucked everything up.
Yeah, exactly. The reactionary conservatives.
Yeah.
That it's literally because they all went to school and they're all pissed off by their postmodern professors and the damn leftists in the student organization and all that stupid shit, right? Even the Peter Thiel, still talks about these problems were created in the radical campuses of political correctness in the 80s and 90s, right? And
right.
Yeah, exactly. It's as though the ideas have efficacy whatsoever on what was happening, you know, in bumfuck Alabama or the suburb somewhere, right?
This is the basic fallacy that Illich is attacking in deschooling society. This basic idea that people do most of their learning when they're being taught, like in school. That most learning is accompanied by teaching, is an effective teaching or school. Whereas most of it is not. And the fact that people were even receptive to these ideas was its own, that they had already learned to be receptive to those ideas in a way before they got to those classrooms.
Yeah, this is what John Vervaeke's thought ways of knowing, right? The top one is propositional knowing. And we disproportionately overvalue the strength of logical propositions way too much, as though if you just tell someone the truth, they'll go, oh yeah, that's right, and they'll get it and suddenly like just change everything about their entire life. So, oh yeah, that's what's true. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
You can't reason someone out of whatever they weren't reasoned into, is one way of
Hey, Chad, are you listening, Chad? Did you wake up?
I was going to say, McLuhan's complaint that he's pulling the fire alarm and everyone's calling him an arsonist.
Yeah.
Right? So, it's very, it's a good apologia for all the postmodern professors who are saying, hey, this is what's going on. And then I was like, why are you thinking that this is happening? Like, why? Fuck off, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm pointing my finger yelling fire, and then people think that I'm like a wizard casting a fire spell.
That effect happens under electric conditions. The observer is the object, The merging of people's brains, they start thinking, if you said it, you caused it.
You're right.
That's relearning the power of the word, which is an
acoustic. Yeah, the jinx.
Please don't point out the elephant in the room. We're all doing a good job ignoring it. Ignore the elephant.
Yeah.
Okay, so shall we continue?
Tuskness and talk about how great tusks are, and that guy's talking about how deep assholes are, but you can't talk about the animal that you're surrounded by standing on the other side of. Yes.
Okay.
Right.
We did the retail store. Inverting this view from the social system at large to the subjectivity of each person, then, it is said that Western man became equally fragmentary in mind. I read that again. Inverting this view from the social system at large to the subjectivity of each person, then, it is said that Western man became equally fragmentary in mind. The world within which he lives is broken up in... Now, we become fragmentary, but it's not a problem. We enjoy it. The world before electricity. The world within which he lives is broken up into pieces he can only discontinuously visit. The scenes within he only discontinuously as a fragmentation, fragmented mind. Is what you mean there? It's visual discontinuity. Are you there?
Well, hold on. I got a phone call. Fuck. One second. All right. Something fragments. Yes, I agree with whatever you say. Go on.
No. The world within which he lives is broken up into pieces he can only discontinuously visit. You mean visually discontinuously, the print effect, not acoustically discontinuous.
Correct.
Okay.
That meaning that I'm referring. That is how this story goes. Yeah, they're discussing.
Yeah.
Visual.
Because discontinuity is really good for the electric environment, but you have to point out it's an acoustic discontinuity, not a visual. The scenes within which life is lived are out of order or sensible relation, and he makes do the best he can in this state of affairs by merely managing his emotional state and coping enough to carry on. That's this whole part, I'm glad we're getting through this. You can put this shit out there and people will say, yeah, I got fragmented, that's what happened to me. I'll just finish it. Now we'll do the important part, next part. Knowledge of the whole, either the whole individual identity or the whole social world, two ways to the same thing, is out of reach. While he would logically assume that all the parts of his life would collectively amount to its whole, it seems nevertheless that he can never properly sum all these parts to produce it. Now, if the kids today are all psychologists, just because they're all involved with everything and can observe their chemical body, then this kind of talk might appeal to them. But it's not telling us anything that's important. Each man lives in his own private world as fast as tumbling like shards of glass in a kaleidoscope. You're talking too much about fucking individuals. Now, you can talk about individuals in the electric age because of the increasing co-anesthesia, the censoring of every person at the center of their media vortex.
Me, I'm not saying this. I'm saying that the Marxists are saying this. I'm not saying any of this shit.
I hope you restate that point. You should say that in the middle. By the way, you know, as people get lost trying to understand, they'll think you're saying it. Remind them, this is not me. This is, according to the book, according to your professor. No wonder then. He's in relation to...
What I want to know is, why is everything being blamed on the Marxists? I mean, Trump yesterday, Marxists, everything's blamed on Marxists. It seems like a very
because
broad...
Because it's tribal, for fuck's sake. It's tribal, Greg. Marx is the image of tribalism to Western men. They don't know they've become tribal. They don't know
if the Soviets won the Cold War, we'd be blaming it all on, you know, Henry Ford or something.
Remember what McLuhan said. The John Birchers are tribally opposed to being tribal. That's exactly what you're talking about, Greg, what you're complaining about. They're the tribal image. They're not Marxists. No fucking way. You know, anybody who looks at it literally, they don't read Marx, they don't know what Marx said. They just say, we've got our enemy all around us, and they've taken over. Now, those are fucking literate people, semi-literate, patriots or whatever, who have no literacy in them. But it's in the meme part of their fucking brain that we don't know how that effect got there. And it's still there. So it's booked arguing against electric media is what's going on. It's like Finnegan's Wake. There's no people here. There are fucking media arguing the cultural war. Media effects, which we don't know how that happens to people collectively. Does that make any sense, Greg?
Yeah.
You're hopeless. You're going to have to read
the book. No, it makes sense.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be hopeless.
Yeah, okay. No wonder then his uncertain relation to others, the endless division of work and the many processes comprising civilization results then in divide itself. But fuck all that shit. But I understand why Clinton is doing that. But he's got to spell out more often throughout this first part with it put in big print. This is not my opinion. Now we get to where you kind of stated, I think. Fragmentation is told by Marshall McLuhan.
Just have a transparent big thumbs down emoji on all of the pages where you have been told that such and such. You have a big
Actually, you're being too prose-like.
The real
you're doing
part,
prose.
Yeah.
You need more interruptive discontinuity, which is going on in the text world anyways. You need to interrupt what you're saying more. With that repeating point.
No, I need to get my writing style into a style that would be publishable so that I can make money writing. So I need to practice writing prose of the sort that gets bought.
Well, that might get you some money, but it's going to get into a lot of fucking problems. They'll sue you later when they find out you didn't mean that.
No, I literally
don't
do...
fucking adapt. Look, the real guys never adapt to the audience. Fucking write it properly.
Okay, so you know how McLuhan got accused of writing like a schizo, and he's like, hey, I've got a past writing that shows that I can write perfectly good prose like anyone else. Well, I've got a great back history of lots of writing that proves that I can write like an absolute goddamn schizo, but I need to prove that I can write regular prose like everyone else. It's a backwards.
Okay.
Well, it's, maybe Catherine D. likes it and educated people, but and that's all you're trying to get to, is them, okay? Then they like this comp. Mark Andreessen, the fucking guy who built part of this shit, he thinks it's good, apparently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does he fucking know? But the thing is, you should ask him, what the fuck do you like about it? What, and see what he thinks he's reading. Ask him pointedly.
He's like, well, I really like this. They're like, what? What the fuck?
Yeah. What the fuck are you liking? This is a fake out. This is not me. Hire me now and you don't have to read this shit.
Well, okay. I need to keep working on my writing. Sorry, continue, Bob. You were about to get hard, as it were.
So then you say that unassimilable weirdo Morris McClure decided that this explanation wasn't good enough. I mean, it sounds pretty good to me. Look at you fucking sucking up to everybody, Clint. This is bad. I apologize. I have to write about this guy. He's a fucking weirdo. Unassimilable.
I don't blame you that, I don't blame you for thinking it sounded okay.
I mean, it sounds pretty good to me, and it sounds pretty good.
Yes. It's rhetorical. I'm speaking rhetorically. I need to reach an audience and not insult their intelligence. Like, you are, you gloat in insulting the intelligence of everyone who's dumber than you because they're dumber than you. But
yeah.
No,
you haven't established how smart you are yet. You can't insult people yet.
Here I am being so tactful and wasting so many words and being so prosaic and keep complaining. Well, Clinton, why are you beating around the bush? Yeah.
Okay. I gotta tell Bill, don't stop. We need to record. We're going to go a little past. Hopefully we'll still be here. We'll keep talking. We got to go longer than 10 minutes. So, Bill, record ahead on an hour.
Bob, you'll have to phone me in.
Hooray.
What'd you say? I have to phone in?
In about 5 minutes, you'll have to phone me in. I'll be,
I can do that.
I'll stick along. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let me just type this to Bill in case he's not hearing us.
What are you doing, Clinton? How come you need to be phoned in?
Oh, because I'm going to be traveling, but I'll still...
Oh, you're traveling, okay.
5 minutes to kill walking around a shopping mall for my bus to come, so I can find a quiet corner and keep it cool for another hour.
Okay, let me just... I guess Bill heard me. No, in 15 minutes, I didn't say that. It's June 14th.
You didn't say that.
Yeah, okay, so anyways, I'm saying just in case... Don't stop broadcasting. Don't stop taping, broadcasting, and recording.
Keep going. This is important.
Yeah. Casting and recording. Don't stop broadcasting and recording.
Stop broadcasting.
All right. He says okay. I think he's hearing me. Okay, good. All right. Back to this article.
This unassimilable weirdo.
Yes. It sounds pretty good to me, and it sounds pretty good to pretty much every sociologist and economist and historian and psychologist who's ever contemplated or actively studied the matter. No matter, something else had to be going on beneath all that which nobody but him was paying attention to. You might say, after all these guys you list, they're all products of the book. They're conceptual. They're specialists. You might just reinforce their bias or point out what the bias is. Yeah, it's almost like you need to do a bit more meta on this and different print style, different font. Something else had to be going on with that. One way into his dissenting thesis on the causes of individuality was his own. No way was it his own individuality. See, that gets into subjective stuff, but okay, you're fucking dumb audience. Then I can't understand why anybody would do anything unless it was in them and they were unique or different. Like everybody's trying to be, and so this is true, but this has got nothing to do with his fucking personality. He was, I repeat, unassimilable. No, he's very similar. Fuck, he became famous. He didn't become an asshole. He got a fucking Order of Canada. See? He was assimilable. That's why you have to give him credit for popularizing, as people say, finding his way in all these difficult fascists, right? He just would not melt into group or collect consciousness. Yes, he did. In 1968.
What was assimilated was his, was his TV body, but not him.
You've got to say that.
We're saying it here. It's getting recorded. Bill's recording it.
Yeah, I'm right. I want money for this. I'm fucking writing this shit.
Clinton. Bob, Clinton.
No, Bob.
Surely.
You've got an interview with this important piece. You're welcome. I'm glad I'm here to give you my audience. Keep going.
Surely, and what's Greg yelling about?
Yes, surely, somewhere in this essay of Clinton, if we want to call it an essay, or article, or book, or whatever it might be, surely that Barry Switker went to lunch with Marx and McLuhan must be included.
Yeah, he gets a few things wrong in that thing. I watched that. Okay. He had a big influence on Bon Echo. Only Brian knows Bon Echo, right, Brian? You know Bon Echo. You know Bon Echo, Greg?
Well, I don't maybe know her, but so I know of her.
Yeah, yeah. She was really influenced by Zwicker. And he also led the truth movement in Canada over 9-1-1.
Yeah, the 9-11 truth.
Oh, yeah, you would have seen him at that scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He was, I repeat, unassimilable. He just would not melt into group or collective consciousness. Now, when McClone put out the Dew Line in July 68, he's got a little article on him in Newsweek, and he says, we just go along with what everybody else is doing. He knows that you have to go along in this new collective thing. He's not trying to be an individual.
That's a strategy in the maelstrom, but I guess the word assimilation has a connotation since Star Trek, The Next Generation. Right.
Okay. I just don't know your audience. Yeah.
Okay.
He just would not melt in. Okay. The guy just absolutely cannot lose himself. They're fucking ridiculous. He could lose himself. That was the point. He could be fucking a dummy and say stupid things. Not to be an individual, but to be as stupid as the effects of the global theater were, which was turning bizarre forms into more and more acquaintance.
Yes. He could take off as much as
He could do a takeoff. A good point. He used to ask that in the seminars. What's the difference between a put on and a takeoff? Nobody knew what the answer was. Because he was too good with his words. He wasn't good with his words. He had this fucking boring vocabulary, and every book was rejected by the cognoscenti of New York who wanted being gay. They needed variety. They needed fucking stimulation and bullshit surface shit. They got mad at his books. They kept repeating. They all said, this fucking book says nothing new. He said that all 5 years ago. That's really what they complained about, that his books had no fucking writing variability that a normal author is supposed to provide. Now, that's where he didn't care. He says, I'm into reinforcing this point, he said. I'm not here to be a novelist or a pleasant guy or entertain your fucking nerves. I'm here to fucking lay down, he said, the fucking new Ten Commandments. I'm Moses, he said. I'm not here to titillate you. Anyways, you'll have to correct that later. Absolutely could not lose himself. Why? Because he was too good with his words. He was not good with his words. He was good at what he was trying to say, but nobody did the homework in reading the background to get what he was saying. McLuhan studied language in both its most baroque and eloquent. This is bullshit. He didn't study fucking shit like this. He actually didn't read books. He skimmed them. Anyway, so reading along, he studied language in both its most baroque and eloquent, its rawest, most base vernacular forms. Nobody knows what fucking things are in vernacular forms. Words are too big, but not for your audience. They get this. He studied how the authors of great literature went about studying their own culture, writing down snippets of living discourse. A few people did that, but they didn't all do that. He studied rhetoric and grammar and dialect. He fucking made that shit up for his fucking PhD because he was at Cambridge. He didn't bring that shit in ever again. and how the teaching of these subjects survived. People, if they read his PhD, they said, well, I understand them. But then they couldn't understand his books because he was way beyond the PhD categories. Saying ridiculous things like the car. If you got a car, you can't have a family. He studied rhetoric, grammar, dialect, and how the teaching of these subjects survived through the rise and declines of Western history's many empires. He studied sermons and poems and journals and political pamphlets and fucking dumped them all. Remember he said, he talked to somebody, he said, I've wasted 20 years studying English literature. You remember that quote?
Yes, I know.
Okay, good. Because who did he say that to?
Vogelin.
Okay, yeah. So he knows he's leaping into the unknown. He's going to talk on a level nobody understands and no literature or no concepts, no education prepares you for it. At best, a few artists might help you. But then you think these artists are fucking jerks and you can paint like those abstract expressionists too. That didn't work. He studied, how the teaching of these subjects survives. He studied sermons, poems, journals, political pamphlets, the most mundane and parochial issues throughout thousands of years of life. He did that at college, not after.
No one else did. He did that. and he was analyzing the usage of language, identifying. He had a
appreciation
of how words.
He was studying TV shows and ads. What people didn't think was relevant content. Don't study fucking TV content. That's bullshit. Like Bauer says, it's fucking pap. He studied pap at best for getting an instant backup of a pattern that was hard to understand.
Bob, the way he can take apart poetry, word by word, his close reading was amplified, not just with the Cambridge shit, the new criticism. I mean, he studied the new criticism, he fused it with scriptural exegesis, four-stage scriptural exegesis, to see how these multiple layers were built into Finnegan's Wake and all this stuff in a way that no one...
He never talked about Finnegan's Wake in public, only in his letters. Nobody knew about Finnegan's Wake.
Because he's really fucking... He has a ridiculously trained perception of how language works and analyzes...
Yeah, which he didn't use when taught... He wasn't dealing with words or verbality. He was dealing with iconic... ESP, for fuck's sake, is what he was dealing with.
Because he had gotten through all the words in his 20s and 30s, and then he moved into these iconic forms when he got done mastering the word. That's why he calls, he claimed to have Logos and shit. He figured out Logos in college.
So, said, the way we are, unbelievable as it is, we don't need to know anything to understand me. I'm finally the guy that everybody can understand if you just shut up and listen to me, which he couldn't get anybody to do. So he made fun of that.
You know. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
All right.
If you're going to be extreme on the old stuff, I'll be extreme on the new stuff. Okay?
Okay.
Where you're going.
All right.
You be extreme about your past that you ignored all your life until 3 years ago, now crashing, trying to read what you should have done when you were in college. You're heading towards your old self when you can accept it again, and I'm explaining that old self. Its primary and secondary and tertiary plots touch and tumble through their relations and illusions of reverence painting with the very painting of encyclopedic cultural knowledge and a new unity. Then you put yourself above that meta and go, no, he didn't. I'm just putting you on. You need to talk to your audience. I'm putting you fuckers on. That would be interesting. Maybe you'd be rejected because Mark and them are running around looking for fucking explanations that they can hold on to. Remember Marshall said, give people concepts because they have to have something to have grip on. They have to get a grip on something.
Yeah,
you've got to point at what you're doing, Mark.
What I'm doing here is not so much giving them concepts, but giving them a story. And everything is a story and a hero and narratology and a setting and a character. So I'm giving McLuhan character, which you don't recognize.
He sent me the email last night and said, I want to do the essay. I'm not doing that fucking horrible essay. But we're here, and I'll do it because you want to do it. But I didn't know you were going to make us do it. I don't waste my time, but it's good what I'm saying. It's time people heard a good critic of what they think is the best McLuhanite writing out there. No.
Wasted time for me to have written if I didn't get this extra meta layer of commentary.
That's right. You need me to fucking finish it.
Thank you. I knew that I'd watch it and then bring it to you. The great,
Oh, don't say I'm great. Look, all the sensitive ones out there said, that fucking guy is such an egomaniac, Clinton. How do you dare fucking do a radio show with him? That fucking guy is a fucking idiot. He's worse than Mark Stallman. That's what they're going to say about me. McLuhan's much-ignored literary criticism demonstrates amply McLuhan's masterful awareness of the true power of language. He demonstrates over and over, see, McLuhan saw the new languages. He barely could fucking tolerate words. He tells Ezra Pound, you guys figured out words the way you were writing about it, Clinton, but I consider words a drug.
Yes. That's a great line.
Yeah, it's hard for people today to get that point. They go and meditate on Buddhism or whatever they fucking meditate on. No, meditate on McLuhan, for fuck's sake. What he said. See what your mind tells you how to understand it. McLuhan's much ignored, but he demonstrates over and over the techniques by which history's most celebrated words has reached into the world in its history. You're almost like being a poet here. And into the mind and its depths, and released energies by rubbing together and ripping apart the fabric of each. Then the other Clinton says, no, he didn't. He would not be obsessed with the chemical body mind. He called a brain pan. Reading Lewis, I see the word brain pan. I never saw the word before McLuhan. He fucking got it from Lewis, maybe. Lewis talks in the 30s about our brain pans. Had you ever
brains are the excrement, right? Our brain pans.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The, yeah, the nurse's brain, the pan of your, of an invalid. Can't get to the toilet. So, now, as I read Lewis and all these books that nobody reads, McClune didn't write one goddamn original sentence other than his basic terminology. There's so much of Lewis in him. What he, all these key ideas are in Lewis. Now, McClune does Lewis better than Lewis. He makes it acceptable. He doesn't get bogged down in the Manipian satire. He just fucking states what it is. And, the, and nobody read Lewis, so they think he invented it. No. There's so much of, you know, the four guys, Eliot, Joyce, Pound, and Pound is a fucking incredible influence that nobody knows about. But the, and that's what Ted Carpenter said, the big influence on Marshall, and this is a guy who knew Marshall, was Pound. You know, and Marshall always said, don't tell them what you're doing. Distract them. And we have a note on that. He says, don't tell anybody that, that, Chaucer was a big influence on Joyce. And nobody knows that. So, the same applies to himself. He's not going to tell anybody, what he's really getting it from. So he, it, what is that? Is that the chip body of McClune speaking? Knowing it's going to become a paranoid, surveilled fucking thing. And everybody's, you know, inside this global surveillance, so he's going to fucking write to anticipate that. He's going to lie. One of the chapter titles in Police Archive is Art as Lie. Casuistry. Now you do casuistry, here. That's, you know, excess of reasoning. Okay, and how, oh wait, look at this sentence. So when he's sitting in a classroom or a staff meeting or a conference hall listening to what's being said, he's not going to not be having thoughts about what's being said. I bet your grade can't get that one. He's not going to not be having thoughts about what's being said. What the fuck does that mean? Okay. And how it's
Did
being
he say
said.
That?
Okay.
But it's not and not? Really?
Okay. So, you know, and we're listening. Greg is someone with iconic intelligence. Animator. No fucking literary intelligence. Greg.
Absolutely
so.
Not. No literary yeah. intelligence whatsoever.
That's right. And so we have to, the only literary semi-intelligence Greg has is political conceptual arguing. So he'll write to ombudsmen. He complains
yeah,
to
them again
pure bureaucrats.
I did it again this week.
Yeah?
Yeah. The only reason I did it was, the only reason I did it was I took Catherine to the hospital and I was sitting there and watching Canadian news for the first time. Like, I had to sit there and watch it. There. In the office.
Actually,
and
Greg,
then you gotta write a letter.
5 minutes goes by, and oh my god, I can't believe that I wrote the letter off.
Nice.
See, Greg does a literary, he's a John Bircher. He's not a Marsh, he's a fucking John Bircher, tribally opposed to being tribal. That's Greg Double. Because you're taking concepts, you're trying to apply what little book being you have, that's how much you're a North American, and you could only apply it to politics, because that's easy to argue with in a literate way. And you're looking at a medium that's not talking to literate people, fucking Greg.
That's right. Yeah, I'm concerned about the stupid people. I'm concerned what it does to stupid people.
And you have no, way to improve super people. They are gone into a whole other dimension. Many dimensions. And they hate you when you show up. The little people hate Greg. As he saw CKLN.
Oh, they hated me.
The tribal people hated Greg. And there was no real reason to hate him unless you knew this point that he was being literate in an acoustic medium. And that wasn't, that looks like a fucking fascist capitalist, which is what the young kids only knew, is some literate guy with some businessman. No capitalist. That tells you there's more patterns in what I'm saying than anybody's going to write. And how it's being said. That's good that you tell us that, Clinton. That's the point. And how appropriately decorous that how it's being said is. appropriately decorous? That's fucking, what the hell? They would say, what's that mean? What am I decorating? And who said it better or worse in every other case he's encountered in reading when what was being said was said? And who said it better or worse in every other case he's encountered in reading when what was being said was said? And in what other analogous situation what is being said might also be said with a minuteness of adjustment? Now, your Pomo millennials might like this precise sort of minutia because they never heard anybody do it. They're too busy doing gender studies, which is iconic.
It's a kind of a archetypal experience everyone has, but has maybe not articulated.
Yeah, it's not articulated. They can't take it.
Cascading categories of comments that you could make.
You're going to become the new Barth or Derrida. I heard people in New York, 80s students, say, I love Barth. Every night I read him. I don't know what the fuck he's saying, but I love reading him. That's massaging yourself with a book. That's just what you should do. It's like a lower version, the poor man's version of Finnegan's Wake. Get something you can't understand and then try to read it. It'll calm you down from your electrical daylight. Daylight. You get that, Clinton? He's still there, or where's Clinton? He's distracted by other media.
Shattered. Oh, boy.
And weather, implicit
poor
what
guy.
It means.
Completely shattered.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
Wait, the phone in, Bob?
Oh, fucking right. That's right. I gotta go get him. Fuck, I go get his phone number. Shit.
We forgot.
Okay. Should I play some music? Should I play some music?
I play music?
We can talk. I promise.
Okay, yeah, you guys talk about this while I go get the phone number.
Okay, are you good? Yeah, we'll talk amongst ourselves.
Fuck, Clinton missed all this good stuff.
Well, at least we didn't, it might all be good stuff he missed, but at least we didn't move the ball down the field of essay very far.
Okay, you go ahead.
So, Brian, did Clinton wrote a thing where it says, it's not, and not, in one sentence?
Yeah, it's not as if he's not going to be having thoughts or something like coming to that effect.
I wonder, we have to take that sentence and just see what is going on. If you know what's not going on, we don't know what is going on.
I can share my, because I don't want to, you know, get caught up in whether it's true or not. It's just a conspiracy theory I like to share recently, and I think it's a good influence on the upcoming election. You know, I think it's finally time for people to hear that, to accept the fact that Trump's gay.
What? Accept what?
It's time for people to finally accept the fact that Trump's gay.
Trump's gay?
Yeah.
Well, how's that?
What, you didn't know? Come on.
No, I didn't know.
He's the best, he's the best at, everything, including, he's got more thirds than any other closeted gay man ever had.
More what?
More and better beards. He's got the best beards.
Oh, like Melania.
Yeah, and, you know, all the Miss America contest, etc.
Hey, wait, before the show ends, before the recording ends. Hey, so the guy that you wanted to get fired got fired.
Oh, who that?
Wasn't it that baseball player?
Oh, yeah, Bass. Yeah, they let him go.
Didn't he get fired?
Yeah, they let him go.
See? You wanted him to be let go, and he's gone.
Well, I mean, I was, I didn't actually so much want him to be let go as to just, like, I wanted him to either not be causing this controversy about himself or to be causing it less stupidly. Less stupidly, like in a way that actually helps or progresses the conversation rather than just inflaming it and kind of playing into the like, I don't know, he really just, he was just really hitting the dumbest possible note and being like a real caricature of why the anti-pride people are worth, ignoring and suppressing or something. You know, he had like multiple press engagements to kind of, to stand by his beliefs or something, or stand by sharing this video, but there was no attempt to clarify, like, what his beliefs were or what he meant, you know. So it's just like, I just didn't, I was happier to see him at the point it had gotten to, I was happier to see them just cut him loose than for it to continue to be a story around the team. But ultimately, you know, we can't necessarily afford to lose competent pitchers out of the bullpen. So it's not a good thing. I didn't really want them to fire him. I just wanted him to either contribute something useful to the fucking conversation or shut the hell up.
Well, what would he have had to, give me an example of what he would have to do that you think would be good.
Well, are Bob and Clinton back? Like, I don't really want to derail on it. I just, anything other than what he did, like clarifying what.
Well, give me an example of what exactly. No, I'm not saying what you think he should have said. What would you, what would be an example?
If I wouldn't be him.
What would be an example of what would, like, if it started wherever he started.
Hold on,
let me finish.
Because I don't have, I haven't. Answers for you, Greg. I have no specific answers. Formally, if he's going to go to the trouble of making a statement, I would want him to say something rather than nothing,
What was the guy's statement?
The statement was like, "I stand by. I have my personal beliefs, and I stand by what I shared." There's no
clarification
of what
he meant by that. That was it.
Yeah, he didn't offer any clarification of what it was his beliefs that he was standing by were.
Didn't he say that the Bible or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Or something like that pretty much sums up. So.
Well.
So. It was irritating, but, you know,
there's gonna be a lawsuit about this. I know it.
No, there's no need for a lawsuit. There would have been if they had just fired him, well, parlance, it's DFA, he was designated for assignment, which is basically the equivalent of we don't want you anymore. And so the thing is, if they had done that to him right away, then there would have been like a group and a lawsuit. But the Jays basically went through a process of like, okay, like, we respect your personal beliefs and we'll try to integrate your, you know, what you are trying to contribute to this conversation or what you have already contributed that can't be, ignored. You know, we're going to try to integrate that into whatever we're doing here. And we are, you know, willing to work with you. And we're even willing to not even sideline him, to not like sweep him under a carpet or something. But then he like had these multiple like press statements where he didn't clarify anything. And one of them, the second one was, the team general manager was there and, basically the general manager made a statement and then Bass made a statement that basically contradicted the general manager, and that in combination with him being a not exactly impressive pitcher, who at this point is like more actively undermining the what's going on with the team and their messaging, then they had more of a legitimate reason to let him go. Like the Jays took like a week and a half since the first outrage blew up and lots of Jays fans were like, get rid of him. But, you know, maybe the Jays would have liked to have just gotten him right away, but
is he going to get a contract with the Houston homophobes?
Yeah, probably, maybe. I mean, he's like, he's good enough to be a middling bullpen filler right now. So like, he deserves some job that way. It just sucks that he couldn't just keep pitching for us because of this thing. It's just too bad that it wasn't like, I would have appreciated it if it was like a thoughtful, thing that people needed to hear. But anyway, is Bob and Clinton back?
I don't know.
I just, this topic comes up too often, and I didn't like it last time, and I ranted about it. I ranted it a bit, but like, it's just it's a portion, you know?
It's
like
a funny topic. It's a funny topic, that's what it is.
Well, it should have been interesting too.
I want to poll people as to what they're most proud of in their life.
Is that Clint Bob?
We'll have to talk about Clinton. That one more. What people are really proud of? What gives
Happy birthday,
pride?
Trump. Trump said it.
Did you just like, what is all this noise? Is this Clinton on a bus?
Someone needs to be muted.
Oh, that sounds like Clinton. No? No. What happened? Oh, now nobody's, Brian, are you there?
Oh, I'm still here.
You're still there. Who was that?
This usually doesn't take so long for Bob to, you know, hang out. Like, he's done it with me a couple times.
And he's probably doing a negotiation with Clinton right now. Look, I promise I won't be so harsh.
yeah, come back. We'll let you get through the... No, but it really is like, probably maybe me or Clinton should have been reading this thing instead of Bob, because Bob has zero inhibitions about interrupting himself, you know. He often has zero inhibitions about interrupting someone else. At least in that case, it might be, he might be a little more inclined to listen to a few sentences while disputing. But no, it's funny that like, it's like this basic premise of like, we're just setting up what you've been taught. We're not trying to say this is how it is yet.
Did you watch that video of Barry Zwicker?
Yes, I did. Yeah. That's a funny story. The guy's like, he meets a guy who's like it reminded me of, you know, basically McLuhan saying like the situation can't be satirized. Or when he was saying, my hyperboles are as nothing compared to the situations to which they refer. It's like, you know, if this actually happened to him, or imagine, you know, in a pride or something. Man says, if I can, you know, if I can fly to Mars for lunch, I want to fly to Mars for lunch. And you can imagine that that's something he just sort of like up with as a satirical caricature of how people are. It's like, nope, caricatures are real and walk among us.
The reason I found
Are you
that,
there, Clinton?
What?
Clinton should be there.
No, he's not.
He was there with the people in the background coming through.
I thought that was him.
Yeah, and then right. He muted himself.
Yep, I'm here. I'm on
a
bus.
Oh, how are you there?
It's the magic of electricity, man.
Where are you? I didn't see you on the board.
He's on my phone, Greg. I had to call him.
You just wanted to say that McLuhan thing was Zwicker. The reason I found that was that I found this videotape I had. I was transferring it, and it was all or quite a few of Zwicker's Vision TV broadcasts about 9/11, where he pushed himself into getting canceled.
Yep, I know about it.
Anyway, I just looked him up, and then I found that the McLuhan stuff.
It's a good find. Oh. I don't think anybody's ever seen it before.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
He did a whole thing also about how one of the segments is about not driving a car.
About how McLuhan didn't drive a car?
No, about he didn't, how Zwicker didn't drive a car. Or he talks about having driven a car, then having to be weaned off driving a car, making a decision to not drive, but being presented with all kinds of options where he could drive, and then drawing the line as to where he was finally going to give up driving, and then he gave up driving.
There's a couple of little facts he gets wrong. I don't think McLuhan had a heart attack, and then they discovered his brain problem. He was doing that crazy blacking out that made people wonder what was wrong with him. Anyways, I don't want to get on to that. I'm going to get back to you.
Okay.
I'm going to get near the computer. So Brian, the guy, the Christian guy that we talked about last week, the first guy, the first start of the story, that guy got fired, right? Or dumped?
No, Bobby doesn't want to talk about that. Brian doesn't want to discuss that.
Yeah, but I want to get it clear which guy it was, because there was another guy who got into the fight.
Oh, geez, I don't know about that, but yes, the Blue Jay guy who was causing the kerfuffle by sharing some shit on his Instagram and then not apologizing for it, that guy is no longer a Blue Jay, yes.
Yeah, now see, the Christian, the literate, semi-literate Christians, and the post-literate trans, gays, and whatever else they are, neither of them understands why the gays are going to win. The Christians have no fucking clue. And they're not real Christians if you include awareness of the environment as part of being a fucking Christian. You have to learn McLuhanism. He updated Christianity, for fuck's sake. So
that
if
guy
they're
didn't
all fucking
want to,
wrong.
That
what?
Guy, you know what? You know why that guy was worried? He was looking into the future. And he goes, look, I don't want to be called a blue gay.
A blue gay.
If they keep going along this road, they're going to change the name of the team into the Toronto Blue Gay.
That's right.
I hope they don't, because I'm trying to create, I want to, one of my ideas anyway, I want to create a new genre of music called Blue Gays. That's like a mixture of, it's like shoegaze, but with bluegrass instruments.
Okay. Hey, Clinton. You do attempt, what we're coming up to read, to clarify to the numbskulls what's going on. Let's see how you do it.
Bluegrass will build up. I'm trying, yeah.
You mute. We'll get you back on when you can. While the reading, you mute. Unless you have to say something, and you just yell it over the din. Okay. So Greg was laughing. You may not have heard it. I was reading, well, I'll just start it again. How it's being said, that's an important sentence, and glad you highlighted it. But then you go, and how appropriately decorous, don't fucking use the word decorous, that how it's being said is, and who said it better or worse than every other case he's encountered in reading when what was being said was said. And in what other analogous situation what is being said might also be said with a minuteness of adjustment. And whether implicit in what is being said lays some rigid conceptual or ideological scheme of circumscribing the possibility of what might be reasoned out of what is being said. And thus, what might be said in turn to explode any such rigid scheme and befuddle the speaker and audience so circumscribed. How's that, Greg? Greg, will you fucking be involved? For fuck's sake, I'm doing this for you.
Something bad's going on here. Hold on.
Tech Body's always fucking with us this whole show. Do you, Brian, does it make any sense to you what I read? Any applicable sense? Look, you fuckers, would you stay with us? I'm paying for this fucking hour.
Well, yeah, I mean, the essay in general made sense.
No, what I just read, the details. Okay, how it's being said, and how appropriately decorous that how it's being said is. It's decorous.
Yeah, I mean, see, honestly, I feel like it's been a while since I've heard enough sentences together, uninterrupted, to even know what we're commenting on anymore.
Okay, and who said it better or worse in every other case he's encountered in reading when what was being said was said? Okay, so McLuhan is sort of looking at the ground here. Are you calling that decorous? And in what other analogous situations what is being said might also be said with a minutest of adjustment? And whether implicit in what is being said lays some rigid conceptual or ideological schema circumscribing the possibilities of what might be reasoned out of what is being said. If you're into thinking, this is good stuff to fuck with your mind. Okay? But we're not here to fucking make you think better or to even think. Or think squared. We're getting you to perceive something. And thus, what might be said in turn...
McLuhan was always listening very actively. And he wasn't just hearing what you're saying, he's trying different angles of it and wondering where does this thought come from and et cetera, or like where have I heard this expressed better? It's just, you know, once, I mean, it's just, it's
yeah,
coming
Brian,
from...
Yeah, Brian, listen, once ancient... when I met him, I read what Cosmic Awareness said about him. He said, that's a lot of double talk. He said, see these glasses here? Oh, yeah? He said, I wonder why they're there and what they're for. Okay, why would anybody wonder about what the fuck your glasses are for? That was quite extreme in my mind at the time. You're sitting here wondering why there are glasses and what they're for. I understand completely now why he said that, but it was very odd when he said it to me, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that kind of analysis, what is that? It's being a child is what he's doing. It's just be admitted. He's being a child.
It's her concept or something, and it's maybe even related to, you know, at some point in this essay, Clinton is trying to make the point that McLuhan's analysis was materialist, that you could use that word to describe it, and that's almost just getting to the point more in the sense of, you know, never mind all those fucking concepts. I'm just looking at this thing and asking, you know, what does it do and what is it for?
Yeah. And this materialist point, you have to explain that the visual material object ain't there anymore. And the invisible emanations are material. And he's talking about that stuff, which creates words like resonance. Interpenetration. That is the physicality combo. So materialism is not a good word unless you explain what I'm just saying, how it's inappropriate, because everybody thinks materialism is hardware, and they think they're ground hardware.
Right, but it's also a matter of appealing to your audience. That it's like, hey, you all like materialism, right? You think that a materialist analysis is like the way to be relevant? Well, you know, I think the case can be made that McLuhan was materialist.
A dialectical materialist.
That you guys find useful.
Yeah. I have dialectical materialism in the Croker quadrant, my tiny note chart, and we're dealing with the Croker audience, the young people, or even just the POMOs. And so I had the right category. I had dialectical materialism as their term, their reference point. So, anyways... Yeah, I guess Clinton has to juggle his sucking up to the audience with also quite detached and environment to him sucking up the audience. He's got to include both in the articles.
Sure.
Okay, so we're at the... We all know a banger quip when we hear one. We always wish we had said it. Hot takes are the currency of pop culture, whether on Twitter or television panels. Everyone is going along with a line of thinking, and boom, some smartass blows up the whole system upon which the conversation was premised and leaves jaws and eyes popped. Self-awareness is painfully forced onto the naive, and the audience wallows and hoots in delectable sympathy.
Yep.
A smarter person might find that interesting, but it has nothing to do. You should say, a meta Clinton says, and the fact you enjoyed this sentence is due to the global fucking digital theater. It made you think this kind of fucking writing is significant. That's what you got to point out. Everything that they like is a conditioned response.
you like this just because it sucks on purpose.
Yeah. you like yeah. it? Thousands of people are reading this shit? Okay, you gotta do that, Clinton, at some point. It's like McLuhan.
Well, if anyone tells you they like it, you gotta be like, why? You don't even know why you like it.
Yeah. I know this you actually do work. Like it. Clinton, you gotta do a mechanical bride. You're doing your mechanical bride. Then you're gonna do a boat face and confuse everybody and say, I'm sorry, that was all obsolete. Not relevant anymore. I'm into hot and cool media. What he did in 53. You gotta do that, Clinton, at some point. That would be doing McLuhan. Of course, I've done it all. I'm a billionaire because I did it right. I even got the aliens interested. Okay. Insults and burns are the cheapest form of hot takes. Again, a subjective opinion. Maybe your audience likes subjective opinions about things. Everyone is, after all, a hypocrite. And for want of an actual point, hypocrisy can always, always be pointed out somehow by enlarging the scope of a conversation to rope in a damning contradiction. That sort of makes sense. Insults and burns, cheapest form of hot takes. Everyone's a hypocrite. I don't know if you need to say that. It's not a hypocrite. You're judging people psychologically on the chemical body. It doesn't apply. They are worse than hypocrites. They don't know what fucking world they're in or how there is different worlds. Hypocrisy can always, always be pointed out by enlarging the scope of conversation to rope in a damning contradiction. I don't know if you rope in, if you enlarge the scope to point out a damning contradiction. Maybe. The insult may be an unavoidable result of disagreement or correction. But when it is itself the desired result, we have little reason to be impressed. Well, I don't know. You're impressed. The insult may be an unavoidable result of disagreement or correction, but when it is itself the desired result, we have little reason to be impressed. Much more impressive is to express one's dissent eloquently enough to avoid an insult. These are a whole bunch of fucking psychological thinkings, Clinton, that distract, which you want to do, we understand, you distract from fucking talking about what you should be talking about. But that's postmodernism. Don't talk about what you're trying to get at. I like to believe that you can always leave someone sheepish or humbled in a way they'll thank you for it. Words are so dynamic, so potential in their infinite combinations, that they're always, always the perfect words. Rhetoric is a discipline of training one's ability to find those words, to pluck them out of any situation you might be in. It'll take a guy 2 days to figure out, is that rhetoric? Rhetoric is fucking my prime minister lying to me. How is it the discipline of training one's ability to find those words, pluck them out? Too complex, but for people who got time in their hands, they need complex thought. You should say, fragmented by the book is what I would like to write about, but you fuckers can't take it, so I'm going to do some other shit. There's lots of ground here for you to upgrade McLuhan's satire, Clinton.
Because all of you are worse than hypocrites.
Yeah. You need to say, how to be a manipulant. That is the heart of individualism for McLuhan. You had said nothing about what McLuhan said. Human individuality is these millennials are sitting around analyzing everybody. They analyze everybody on TV. They analyze their friends. Okay, so you're presenting McLuhan as an analyzable object, and lots of good details there of complexity. And if you take it seriously, it'd take a few days to figure out how valid your point is. But anyways, human individuality is a function of the felicity of language. No, it isn't. And the powers of language to both bind groups of people within collective solidarity, no such thing as collective solidarity, and on the contrary, to liberate individuals from those binds. Good contradiction there. When we speak with one another, we create a situation which we both subjectively share. You're putting what's going on with language too much into dialectics, like objective and subjective. That's part of the problem here. You're limiting the more complex process, which you indicate by the end of this paragraph, is gestural and verbal manipulations. There's five senses, not one. As embodied beings, we turn the room or the world we inhabit into a space between our minds. What the fuck? I turn the room into a space between our minds. If we fucking grew up in London, England. You gotta add that. And our gestures and words work together to maintain that space that transcends you. The space fucking transcends you? No. establish there is a fucking space you're talking about. And just as easily, we can sever or disrupt or change that space, and thus each other buys your home. Why, fuck. You're in the wrong field, Clinton. Get a psychology degree.
Okay, so what I have to do is talk from within the discourse that my audience is already deep into and can't break out of. They are all tribally, collectively bound up in their own concepts.
Yeah.
And I'm taking the concepts and I'm throwing them back at them, but tweaked and broken and in a way that they, I'm just opening the vision, the ruptures, as I just pointed out, that's what you do. You know, a hot take finds the implicit, boundaries and then shatters them and then surprises people. So I've got to speak the language of my audience. I see how they all talk about this shit. So I'm putting on my readership.
Yeah.
And using their style and their prose.
But you're leaving out the meta. You're leaving out the meta.
I don't need to go meta now. Or at least when I wrote this, I didn't feel the need to go meta.
You know where
you think
meta,
I can go meta?
You know how McClure
went. I don't
want
to come off like a smartass. I can't come off like a smartass. I can't be an self-indulgent and loving his own words.
You will later have to be. You're getting a lot of fucking trouble as we drag through the courts.
Lewis did it, and he got him no friends.
No. Lewis had big trouble. Okay, Clinton, how is McLuhan meta in War and Peace in a Global Village?
Let me think. There's all that stuff about Pavlov. I'm trying to think of what's in War and Peace in a Global Village. There's the Thunders, there's Pavlov and training. And environment. How does he go meta?
You're not near the right answer. You're doing the content. Every page or so, he put a Finnegan's Wake quote, which was incomprehensible, but that's what he was illustrating, what the Finnegan's Wake line was. So he had to learn how to read Finnegan's Wake to get what he was talking about in War and Peace. He went meta by putting McLuhan quotes, Finnegan's Wake quotes on the border. That was the meta part. So people got lost reading the content just to try to understand that. They didn't take no attention to Finnegan's Wake quotes.
Like saying that the Gutenberg Galaxy is a footnote to Innes. It's like saying that War and Peace in the Global Village is marginalia to Finnegan's Wake.
Right. So Clinton, you wouldn't do meta by putting in Finnegan's Wake. The kind of stuff I'm saying is how you would be meta, and you put that in a different font. So if you get bored explaining McLuhan the way you're doing it, I'm telling you what your post-Mechanical Bride will be. You will go meta by writing out tasty stuff, and then saying, this is not what I'm talking about. Matter of fact, it can't even be written what I'm talking about. I used to do that on the radio all the time, say a bunch of shit, and I said, now, if you follow what I said, you didn't fucking get it, because you can't follow what I said. You don't know what I'm referring to, because what I'm referring to can't be described verbally. Then I go back and describe everything verbally. So in a way, I did a similar way, but I think you need to use more McLuhan in your meta. If you ever use the meta. Okay, so bear with me. We'll try to go further along here. Where were we?
I bet Clinton's really glad that this is being recorded.
Yes. He can play for his friends and they can laugh at me. Who is this idiot fucking guy saying these crazy ideas about you? Clinton, what you write is great. I understand it. This guy has, Bob doesn't have any clue what you're talking about.
You go. See, there is the meta. This is literally the meta, Bob.
Yeah, right there. So,
yeah,
we're coming up to our correction here. We Returning to our 10/10th of a pin makers, each shares a portion of the pin in its stages toward completion. They could together restore the commonality of the space they work within that around that pin as a whole. I don't even care if you understand what I'm reading. We're just going to get through this because it's so stupid. As a linchpin, as it were, to sit in a room with an interior decorator or a carpenter or an architect is to enter a new view of that room from their expert eyes. Why a window faces east, or whether the window is straight or well-insulated or well-dressed, or all different specialist facets, different layers of the same object. It takes a well-developed ability to speak to paint these shared scenes, however. Greg, am I reading too fast? Are you getting anything out of this? No.
Okay.
What are you getting out of this, Greg?
I don't know. You interrupt yourself so much. You get halfway through a sentence. No, you can't. It is ridiculous. And so the metaphysical part is, no, you can't think something.
Okay, good point. Good point there, Greg. The various technical... Oh, no, I'm going to not interrupt this next paragraph. The various technical terms and concepts of our hyper-specialization present massive barriers to that communication, however. Everything must be explained. There is always so much preamble in defining of terms and half-decent analogies to overcome. But as with anything else, practice makes perfect. And when the flash is a real connection, it starts sparking off, it becomes addicting. A reason for being, even. You're actually daring to tell people how they fucking should be. Well, that's a good put on. Then you say, McLuhan once quipped, communication of the new may be miraculous, but it's not impossible. The quote is, communication of the new is a miracle, but it's not impossible. Not may be miraculous. Communication of the new is a miracle, but it's not impossible. If you want to correct it. All right?
Okay.
Owing to the fragmentation of society, we are not fragmented. We are too fucking fused, Clinton. That's what's bugging everybody. Owing to the fragmentation of society, which leads to everybody yelling and screaming, culture wars are due to the fucking incredible unity we're living. The fusion.
I agree.
Very good. Owing to, well, I guess that'll be said in a couple of years. Owing to the fragmentation of society today, it is the duty of every man and woman who knows something and is half decent at explaining it to become a miracle. Holy fuck. I'll leave it to your audience to talk about that. Okay. a material basis. If you haven't already thought of the biblical Tower of Babel by now, shame on you. You've got a lot of work to do in either building up a bare minimum of cultural knowledge, a lot of work to do, or developing your faculties for associational or analogical perception. Remember McLuhan, people who read, understand, immediately looked at the facts, said, does he want me to read all those books? And McLuhan said, no, we don't want you to read those books. That's just there for my personal references. He not only didn't put any footnotes in there, he put a bibliography in that he didn't want you to read. While there are many reasons for taking the deep study of religion seriously, that's debatable, the centrality of religion in precisely addressing the issue we're considering here, that of the individual and the group, is paramount in and of itself. And, you know, the meta Clinton would say, sorry, religion fails on all fronts and is not useful in dealing with what we're dealing with. That was their meta statement, but you don't have that yet. It was Goober.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Right.
It was Gutenberg's mass-produced Bible, the product of Europe's first movable type. Wait, you better mute. Okay.
Sorry, that's a crazy person.
It was Gutenberg's mass-produced Bible, the product of Europe's first movable type printing press, which splintered much of the Catholic Church into centuries of protesting factions. It's worth noting what happened. Mechanized production broke a physical object, a book full of profound and holy words, out of its internment within the cloistered spaces of social governance and regulation. Out in the world, the Bible could become a kernel or nexus of new organizations about which people could individuate from the church as they grew together in new religious sects. the dangerous part about getting into religion is nobody fucking agrees on that. What religion? Most people say it's all fantasy, no fucking thing. I'm never going to read the Bible. It's not true. Others are into it ridiculously literally. So, lots of luck with this part. 200 years before the founding fathers of the United States of America constituted the Great Republic upon the rock of extremely wordy legal documents, the proliferation of print ripped through the social fabric like free radicals tearing up biocellular structure. And everybody loved it! Sorry, Greg. 2,000 years prior, the Greeks had transformed their culture from a foundation on the oral poetry of Homer, the philosophical text of the Socratics. Okay, I'm not reading this stuff we already know about. Though you do have here, it is shouted from every rooftop today that we humans are creatures of story. We live in a world of narratives. Wrong! We live in a world of words. Again, that has to be corrected later. Find me, where do we get to you talking about the present? I don't want to hear about this history.
Okay.
McLuhan's Mediaecology is the most materialist perspective you could ever want. Ridiculous statement, you know, you could ever want. Don't bring that in. And it's not materialistic. Remember he said, there are no connections in matter. There's basically no more matter. He's actually non-material, the way people use material. So I guess you would have to define what people think they mean by material. And McLuhan is not that kind of materialist. He's a new kind of materialist. Even concepts and thoughts have material form in the way we put words onto paper. See, a sentence like that, you know, those postmodern guys are going to say, well, that's not true. Part of your distracting stuff, you risk people getting sidetracked and arguing with these extra perambulas, baroque spirals of thought. Even concepts and thoughts of material form in the way we put words onto paper. That's subjective. That's who knows. That's right. From this view, all abstractions lead back to ground. You need to explain ground at that fucking point. The medium is the message. At least capitalize ground. McLuhan was so devoted to faith, he attended Mass daily, so it's worth contemplating how it is that so materialist a theory could come from a man like McLuhan. Well, you're playing to assumptions, conditioned responses there. Remember, George said he was not a fucking Catholic. He did. He went to Mass for some other reason. Oh, no, I think, not really supposed to say this, but Scott Taylor says he went there to commune with, as a psychic, to commune with one of the Marys. You know about that, Clinton? Did I ever tell you that?
No. Scott, did you ever meet that guy with Scott again?
Not Scott Norris, no. Did you say Evergreen Guy?
Yeah, yeah.
He is featured in the end of our millennial series in 2011, our centenary series. And he comes on a couple of times. He was very close to McLuhan in the 70s. He knows a lot about McLuhan, even the secret part about Mary. And he said, that's why Marshall went to Mass. He could be a fucking pagan, occultist, seancer, and talk to Mary. And that's a secret. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I did, so fuck it.
Okay.
All right, the Western individual. The Western individual is an individual long before the division of labor became the norm. He was an individual because he could read books without speaking them aloud for others to hear. He needed a quiet place to read by himself. He found solitude to do so. Now, the world of labor is kinetic space. Kinetic machinery. So, kinetics alienated visibly biased people. They had to adjust to the kinetic reality. And they loved doing it and adjusting. But then the holdover of capitalism and visual space beat them up for fucking trying to be a group mind.
Right.
In the solitude of the mind, capable of silent reading, romanticism could bloom. Okay, so I'm not going to do the historical stuff. Mechanized, a lot of talk of mechanization. Electrifying. I'm going down to the part that says electrifying. Let's see what you do here. One aspect which defines... Did you say something? Okay, great. Here we go. One aspect which defines McLuhan's trend-bucking tendency... Again, trend-bucking, okay for the numbskulls, it's okay, is his demarcation of the electric age from the preceding Gutenberg age. That is, he declared the world constituted by mechanical manufacturers having ended with the growth of the telegraph in the mid-19th century. Might have to explain a little bit more about what the telegraph was, you know, simultaneous, instantaneous, to explain how it's different from a machine. To say that the world isn't constituted by mechanism isn't to say that the mechanism has gone away. What the fuck is that? To say that the world isn't constituted by mechanism isn't to say that the mechanism has gone away. It might be. It's only to say that the mechanism were once the unacknowledged basis of social change, and now they've been won up by a new, more baked material form. Yeah, you're going to have to, well, maybe the millennials don't want it explained too much to them. The environment and physical, maybe being acoustic, tactile people, they like conundrums. You're not supposed to explain this shit. Now you have to explain why they like conundrums. The environment of physical mechanisms has been surrounded and encapsulated to be controlled by an even baser force. Electromagnetism is instantaneous in its effects, unlike physical objects which might travel continuously through space. A copper wire laid... Now, anybody listening to me, I'm slurring, talking too fast, so hopefully they're reading along, and you'll have supplied the link. A copper wire laid across the ocean floor changes its charge state across its entire length all at once. Even the most intensile cord or chain takes time to propagate force across its length, and weight and friction get in the way. No bell on a string, regardless of its construction, can compete with the ability to propagate an invisible energy wave through the universe at light speed. Now, this is not bad. A little over-wordy, but you're trying to describe something different. No bell on a string. We did it. Maybe that seems too obvious to state, but what McLuhan does with this technological inflection point differentiates him from nearly any other person considering the nature of individual fragmentation communication. And the nature of electricity. The thesis of McLuhan's first book, The Mechanical Bride, was quickly abandoned when he cottoned on the media theory. The metaphor of humanity was being mechanized by its machine was a totally old story, no longer relevant. Now here's the thing, if you insist on using mechanism, he was being mechanized by a different kind of environment, still being mechanized. Basic thing is machines are extensions of us. Sure, it was happening and obvious everywhere, but that ubiquity was just obscuring the new, still imperceptible underlying cause, and its effects were still so new as to be barely being felt. Yeah, actually, they are being felt on our deeper sensory ratios. The age of mechanism inaugurated by the Gutenberg printing press, you would say that literate people don't know, they don't feel it. They don't know they are feeling it. They're still fragmented by visual space. The age of...
That's a good point. That's a good point to make.
Yeah. The age of mechanism inaugurated by the Gutenberg printing press was being slowly swept aside by the Marconi universe. Marconi developed the first long-distance technique for radio telegraphy. He's the reason the world went wireless. You know who he competed against? Carolyn's grandfather. Carolyn's grandfather was a great inventor in Boston. And he was working on this wireless Marconi stuff. He knew Marconi. And he blew out the city of Boston a couple of times, the whole fucking city. And so he got scared and gave it up.
Wow.
But he was close. The Evergreens, I remember I was talking to him through the Evergreens, and the Evergreens said, "We wish he wouldn't have given up." And he heard them say that to him. To McLuhan, the wireless world's a discarnate world. Now, you need to explain discarnate because that might mean to people it's not material. So maybe you're going to do that, but you have to say, I'm now going to explain how what you think is discarnate is actually material. I don't think you do that enough, but maybe you'll do that next time. Is a discarnate world. Mechanism is obsolete because mechanism still operates in physical space according to how physical objects must exist and move about. It operates in visual physical space, not tactile visual space, not tactile physical space. In the work of modernist writers, McLuhan's literary discernment recognized the collapse of the material world of physical objects. As early as 19, and then you would say, and he called this visual space. So you could drop using the word material or point out that by material you mean the sensory involvement, because there's lots of psychological studies of the action of sentence.
Yeah.
We don't know how what
yeah.
the action.
I do have a plan to focus directly on why the body blue senses were the new ground for the sort of up-end.
Okay, good.
Know, conceptual models and strategic stuff, and then that's where I'm going to bring it into space and space. Where I'm really, you know, like,
yeah.
usually terms like psychosis would come into play, you know, or
yeah, I'm not getting every word you're saying, but I'm getting the gist. I agree. As early as 1865, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland presented a world of discontinuities. Now, you have been using discontinuity earlier, acoustic discontinuities in a visual medium. Beyond the regulation of regimented scientific knowledge and logical comprehension. That's print-based scientific knowledge. You know, people are logical in electric age, but they're operating on different, more complex frameworks to connect as logic. We're not illogical. Only if you're visually biased do we appear illogical, because you don't understand the other senses, as he said, has their own logics. In that sense, he's still doing rhetoric, dialectic, and grammar. The spaces within which our world is constituted by our communication, an act of communion through language and gesture, which is already subjective. It's also objective, with now itself a product of machines. See, it's tactile. Everything is tactile, Clint, in chemical body reality. The different media make them be one sense or another, kinetic or visual or osmic. But light is tactile. You're always doing interplay and adjusting in response to people, especially in conversation. Remember, he said language is tactile. So this interplay, you have to say subjective and objective. Tactile interplay. All our senses were mechanized and externalized. If we make mechanized a ground word, okay. Hearing and sight and even touch could be packaged and sent over the airwaves. Everything books had, remember, that's touch contact, not tactile touch.